My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to a special West Coast edition of Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Other people want to make friends? I'm just trying to make you a little money. My job is not just to entertain, but to educate and to teach you. So call me at 1-800-743-CNBC or tweet me at Jim Cramer. You know why we come out here so often? It's because Silicon Valley is the crucible of innovation. It's where things are created. It's where fortunes are made. You know why we don't do our show from Washington? I think it's where innovation is stifled, fortunes are lost, and companies aren't created. Washington is the anti-Silicon Valley, with some incredibly rare exceptions. It isn't hard to find innovation out here, is it? We can go to any trade show like the one we went to earlier this week at NVIDIA, where we saw the future and we saw how we can own a piece of it. The ripple effects were everywhere today as NVIDIA spread pixie dust throughout the averages, Dow gaining 269 points, S&P rising 0.32%, NASDAQ advancing 0.2%. Tonight, we have a bunch of the winners from NVIDIA's pioneering work in artificial intelligence and accelerated computing, including Medtronic, which partners with NVIDIA to come up with better outcomes for colon cancer tests for all sorts of medical devices. The innovation in Silicon Valley, it's right in your face. But in Washington, oh, it's a lot harder to detect the government's anti-innovation bias, isn't it? They're so clever about hiding it, and they're just as clever in camouflaging their contempt for those who've gotten rich with technology, even if it's tech that's improved your life, and like with NVIDIA, maybe made you wealthy too. However, there are times where the mask just slips off. Maybe they can't prevent it, and you can see the truth. The regulators, they hate big business. The bigger it is, the more successful it is, the more they abhor it, especially, it seems, if it involves our crown jewels of tech, the companies that brought us back from our industrial nadir, when our nation only seemed to excel at making just movies and soft drinks, with anything of superior intellectual property being manufactured overseas. Well, you know what? Today was one of those days where Washington couldn't hide their anti-business bias. Today, the Department of Justice, along with 16 states, sued Apple. And you know what? I think it was a shameful day. A shameful day indeed. Because I am telling you, there is no merit to this case. Now, you know me as someone who said for ages and ages, not to mention a gigantic amount of points, that you should own Apple, don't trade it. Why do I say it? Because Apple sells at a particularly low price to earnings or sales ratio? No, not really. Because it's got the hottest technology out there and it's just crushing it, roiling over so many different industries in a positive way? No, actually, that's NVIDIA. Watch our special tonight at 8, my special interview with Jensen Huang, the CEO of NVIDIA, if you want to know my other own it, don't trade it stock. No, no, no. I say own Apple, don't trade it. Because it's the most innovative consumer product technology company ever. Technology company. Creating things we know and love and trust. With the highest customer satisfaction rate of any business on earth. Apple never makes anything unless it's as perfect as it can be made. I say own it, don't trade it, because the phone represents an actual great bargain, something you can get with a telephone line that's subsidized by the carriers, so you barely even know the cost. And if you can't pay, then you can buy one used, which is often as good as new. Why? Because it's Apple. I say own it, don't trade it, because they care about my privacy and protect it better than any other company on earth, to say nothing about Uncle Sam, which I don't when I consider this lawsuit, yet whether they try to protect our privacy at all. I say own it, don't trade it, because Apple makes its ecosystem available to millions of developers who in turn have hired millions of people, taking back the mantle of manufacturing that our country lost years ago. And today, just today, I just got a whole brand spanking new reason to own Apple, don't trade it. I know a loser case when I see one, and the United States of America versus Apple is a loser. As I used to say on the trading desks, not today, Satan. Now, for a moment there, when the news broke, I feared that this might be a devastating antitrust case. Maybe justice had some sort of horrible smoking gun that would make Apple look like Microsoft more than 20 years ago when they lost their big antitrust case. Back then, there was so much evidence of anti-competitive behavior, it was easy for the government to paint Microsoft as a monopolist out to destroy everyone else's business. Well, absolutely, because it was true. But this time, if they have a smoking gun, let alone multiple smoking guns, I sure didn't see them. The worst they have is some 2019 email from a vice president of product marketing from the Apple Watch acknowledging that, yes, the Apple Watch, quote, indeed, quote, may help prevent iPhone customers from switching, end quote. Handcuffs! Last I checked, there's nothing anti-competitive about trying to retain your existing customers, but maybe the law changed. Now, I didn't go to Harvard Law School for nothing, because if that's the best they have, well, let's trim a little off that budget deficit and drop this case and find one against someone who doesn't create the most jobs, pay the most taxes, and create the best products we've ever had. Of course, there is a huge difference between the Microsoft case back in the day and Apple now. At the time, Microsoft really did command 95% of the worldwide market share for PC operating systems. Justice had a real case, but Apple only has 20% market share for smartphones worldwide. And if you listen to the analysts who follow the stock, that number is actually dropping pretty quickly, like the stock that lost $115 billion in value today. And then I thought, okay, maybe I'm too quick. Maybe Justice has emails that look like something out of the Standard Oil predatory pricing model that gave it 100% of the oil market over century ago. Maybe the feds have a true monopolist in their grasp, a company that's determined to destroy everyone else in the business, even though Apple obviously isn't doing anything like that in reality. Believe me, you'd notice. Instead, what I found was a pastiche, a mosaic, if not a genuine hodgepodge, of issues involving allegedly suppressed super apps, hampered streaming video games, Apple Watch tie-ins, and Apple Pay privacy concerns that collectively amounted to one of the most bogus boogeyman of all time. There's no Standard Oil. There's no Gates. There's no Rockefeller. There's just the greatest product in history, the one that's become our most cherished possession, and now the government wants it to make it worse, not better. Thanks for nothing. And that really is what this case is about. The government wants to make it worse for the company we like and better for companies we don't like. Justice literally created this whole new term. It's called the performance smartphone market. And then accuses Apple of attempting to monopolize the performance smartphone market. I burst out laughing when I read it. Never heard that term before today. Yes, it's true that Apple has 70% of the performance smartphone market, but that's because hardly anybody else is making anything that can rival the iPhone's performance. Is that Apple's fault? I mean, the government basically created this category out of whole cloth just to make Apple look bad. I'll give the Justice Department this, though. They did manage to scare a lot of the summer soldier and sunshine patriot shareholders out of the stock today. Those people will probably sell more Apple tomorrow because the regulators just created, I kid you not, a head and shoulders pattern for the stock. Who knew the Justice Department was filled with a bunch of closet chartists? Love them. But I'll tell you this. The decision by the Justice Department to go against Apple will end up like any of the myriad analysts who've gone from buy to hold on Apple stock during my time. It's creating still one more buying opportunity because the regulators, they ain't got nothing for you. Bottom line, maybe when this loser of a lawsuit comes to trial, we'll look back and say, thanks, Justice. I remember that day when I bought the stock of Apple at a discount. And boy, was I ever right to hold on to that one. Let's take calls. Let's go to Bill in New Jersey. Bill.
Hey, Jim. Booyah.
Booyah, man. What's up?
I just want to know why Pepsi is so viable. It goes from 196 a year ago to 166. Now it's on the move on the upside, but it was flat yesterday, made a couple pennies today.
Sure. Well, you know what? This is about the about Eli Lilly. It's about Mounjaro. It's about Zepbound. It's about the GLP-1s, and people feel that people won't want to eat as many Frito-Lays. You can just eat one if you take those drugs. And right now, people are kind of like, it's a lull. People are forgetting about those drugs. And Ramon LaGuardia is a pretty good manager. I say Pepsi's fine, not great, not bad, but a 3% yield is probably not going to hurt you. Earl Merlin, Earl.
Hey, how's it going, Jim?
Good day. How about you, Earl?
I'm good. So I've been looking at Taiwan Semi for a while. Ever since it's been about $80, and I want to know, should I wait for a pullback or tap in now?
I think it's worth waiting for a pullback. You'll just get some story out of China that makes it sound like everyone's scared, and that's when you've been buying this and right to buy it, and that's what you'll do it again. Okay, today, I think today's decision by the Justice Department to go against Apple is creating just another buying opportunity for the stock. Thanks, Justice. Although I'm worried about that head and shoulders pattern, Justice. All right, tonight, I'm getting a closer look at all the companies that are partnering with NVIDIA's groundbreaking technology, including Medtronic. The medical device company is using NVIDIA's chips to improve many of its own technologies. I'll find out more from the CEO. Then Five Below sank today after its latest earnings report, but is now the time to go shopping for the discount chain? I'm going to get to the bottom of the story with the CEO. And I couldn't come to San Francisco without sitting down with the leader in cybersecurity, Palo Alto Networks. How's the company adapting to the latest sentiments surrounding its growth? I'm going to sit down with the company's top brass. So stay with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on X. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Mentions. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
My biggest surprise at this NVIDIA conference has been all the healthcare companies that are using AI to revolutionize the industry. Take Medtronic. That's the leading medical device maker. They're using NVIDIA's technology to create more accurate colonoscopies with their GI Genius Intelligence Endoscopy module that makes far fewer mistakes than an unaided human eye. But today I got a chance to see how this device and others developed with the help of NVIDIA firsthand seem to be changing the whole medical industry. And then I spoke with Medtronic's chairman and CEO, Jeff Martha. Take a look. Jeff, from the work we've done out here, I keep hearing your name, your company's name, over and over and over again as being the pioneer of how to use AI for democratization, for personalization, and for lowering the cost of health.
Right.
So what are you doing?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on, Jim.
Sure.
It's glad to hear that you've got it. You've got the headline here. So, look, the intersection of traditional biomedical engineering, which is what Medtronic is all about, right, has been all about for 75 years, the intersection of that with digital technologies, today's digital technologies, whether it be data, AI, edge computing, cloud computing, robotics, that coming into our space has been a game changer. And it's allowing us to get to those headlines you just mentioned, using data to democratize, as you said it, good healthcare and actually personalize therapies. Things like deep brain stimulation for Parkinson's, personalize that over time, or surgery like spine surgery, which we were talking about off camera here. Lots of room for improvement there. And the AI is personalizing surgical plans.
As opposed to just having 17 million people with lifelong pain.
Right.
With no real help, with pills that have so many side effects that it's not worth it.
You got it.
Now, how about one that I think is palpable when you give the percentages? Colorectal cancer, which is preventable. And I know I talked to you off camera. I said, I'm going to go for a colonoscopy because I've been bad. I use another method that does not give you as much view about what can happen.
Right.
Just tells you where you are now. What are you doing with a colorectal cancer?
All right. So what we're doing there is, as we already participate in colonoscopies. We have technology for colonoscopies. But what we saw an opportunity to take all of these colonoscopy videos that have already been done, 13 million of them to be exact, and train an algorithm to find those polyps that surgeons were missing.
Classic AI of what we learned with NVIDIA. Classic.
Exactly. It's a great example, and we're partnered with NVIDIA. We partnered with them well over a year ago, and it's their technology that's on the edge in the GI, the gastrointestinology suite, where the colonoscopy is being done, processing this algorithm real time. So that's the beauty of this, is that we didn't have to change the surgeon workflow. It's the existing surgeon workflow. That AI box is right there. We have that algorithm. It's FDA approved. And what we found in the clinical studies is that surgeons were missing 26% of the polyps. And again, it's not that they're doing something wrong, other than being human.
Right.
When they're doing 8 procedures a day, in some cases 10, their eyes get tired over time and you miss things. And some things are almost impossible to see with the naked eye, and the AI is picking it up and the AI doesn't get tired.
AI doesn't make, we keep learning how AI is better than humans, but right. It's because they don't get tired. They don't make these mistakes that could be life-threatening. Now, you guys are doing some incredible hypertension stuff that could make it for, that now it's FDA approved,
right.
That could make it so people who don't like to take their medicine because they can't see that they have hypertension, you'd save their lives for them.
Right. I think, look, Jim, this hypertension, this new hypertension procedure we call Symplicity, could be the biggest thing that we've ever done.
Yeah, I think so.
We've been working on it for 15 years. As you mentioned, just got the FDA approval. And what it is, it's a day procedure where we're actually applying some energy to some nerves around your kidney that is a root cause to much of hypertension.
Right.
And it drops your hypertension down pretty instantly. And we're seeing double-digit drops in hypertension, and even like a 4% drop is like a 30-40% improvement in strokes and heart attacks and things like that. And so it's a day procedure, no pain, and the effect lasts. We have thousands of patients in our database here, and we have it going out to 10 years. The effect actually gets better over time.
Now, when you do work with back, I mean, there's one where you have a lot of data. People are doing, from the work I've done, people are saying, well, you know what? I've seen a lot of things. Let me tell you what we think you should do. Guesswork, yeah. People who are just relying on their own personal history of
right.
being a doctor, that can all go.
Right.
Now we can just do the database and find out what's right.
Right, so you're talking about spine surgery, any surgical procedure, right?
Right?
And these surgeons spend their whole life, a lot of time in school.
Right.
And then they graduate med school, they do a residency and then a fellowship to specialize in something like spine surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And they spend a lot of time honing their craft over years and years and years. And then when they retire, we lose a lot of that knowledge.
Right.
So now we're collecting all this literature, all these surgical experiences into a database and applying AI to that if you were to go into back surgery now, you get your image,
right.
your CT image, your MR image. We load that into this tool, this AI based surgical planning tool that has all this historical knowledge in it and is constantly learning. And we'll personalize your back surgery
Now 3 years ago, was any of this going on before?
Just starting, now we've got thousands and thousands of people in the database now. Now we're personalizing implants. You
right.
can actually personalize based on your images, based on what the AI algorithm is saying we should do for the surgery. We'll personalize the implant in terms of a rod that's implanted, a scaffolding, if you will, for your spine. We'll personalize that curve for you.
People got to know that they can go to the doctor. It's different from when, if they haven't been in 3-4 years, maybe they could learn something about themselves and save their lives.
Absolutely. And what I'm so encouraged is not just about the technology that's come in, it's just how physicians, their intellectual curiosity is they're adopting it. They're working with us, the FDA. They got to watch safety and efficacy, but they want to see this technology get to patients, and they're collaborating with industry in the appropriate way to say, okay, how can we make sure that this is safe? How do we make sure we can, because it's data,
right.
how do we make sure we don't betray any patient trust, but how do we get this technology to patients and how do we democratize healthcare? So I really feel like between the regulators around the world, the FDA leading the way, physician community, the big tech community, like NVIDIA,
right.
you talked about Jensen this week, they're very focused on this, working with the med tech industry to make this happen, because there's big companies like Medtronic, but there's also a lot of startups
right.
out there. A lot of startups out there that are doing some really innovative things that keep us on our
well,
toes.
Look, all I can tell you is what you've done with your company. I've seen you since you became CEO. You're a big thinker, and you're getting it done. It's
yeah,
really
thank
impressive.
You.
That's Jeff Martin. He's the chairman and CEO of Medtronic, MDT, and it's just very exciting stuff. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank
all right.
What the heck just happened to the stock of Five Below today? Now, we know the dollar stores have been disappointing this earnings season. Last night, we got some not-so-hot results from this $5 store. A small top and bottom line miss, management blamed theft, along with tepid guidance for the current quarter and the year ahead. And that's why the stock plunged more than 15% today. And this is a darling. What do we do with it now, though? Five Below still has a very ambitious store growth agenda. And if they can beat the theft issue, this might be a terrific entry point. Although it's tough to own any of the discount retailers here. Let's talk it over with Joel Anderson. He's the president and CEO of Five Below to learn more. Mr. Anderson, welcome back to Mad Money.
Jim, thanks. Great to be with you as always.
Well, Joe, I've got to tell you, lost it all the kerfuffle of the stock price today. It was a pretty good year and a pretty good quarter that you just went through, wasn't it?
Hey, Jim, it absolutely was a good, it was a great quarter. You know, what happened yesterday, we obviously disappointed investors, and they let us know that today. What shouldn't be lost in everyone, though, is we didn't disappoint our customers. And, you know, we're coming off a quarter with a 3-1 comp, and sales grew 16% last year. So the customer still likes what they see. It's all things Easter over my shoulder here. And, you know, we're pushing ahead to continue to please our customer.
Now, let's go over some of the things that you've done also that maybe people think are not working that I think were. Five Beyond. This was something I know I was concerned at one point. I thought maybe you're getting too expensive. But that's working out well, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, Five Beyond started when tariffs happened back in pre-pandemic. And we started with 10 below, which is really a defensive strategy. And out of that came Five Beyond. We converted over 450 stores last year to the Five Beyond format, which is about two-thirds the front of the store is Five Below. And the back of the store, you enter in a store by store inside a store, and you enter Five Beyond. And it's working great. It's really been a driver of sales for us.
All right, so let's talk about what the analysts spent most of their time talking about. And I understand that. At one point, even someone said you're beating a dead horse here. But there were some theft issues. It's elevated, but not just at your place. It's elevated with a lot of different stores. And what I was thinking about was you were the first one at least to say, you know what, maybe our problem is with a little bit too much self-checkout. Now, you are pivoting on that, correct? And it's starting to address of how self-checkout may be a weakness, not enough defense against theft.
Yeah, it's a good call out, Jim. But I think it's also important we remember why self-checkout really took off, not only for us, but most retailers surged during the pandemic because, as you recall, people didn't want to interact with other people and the customer really embraced self-checkout. So it was really done, the explosion was done out of customer experience. But, you know, we've got to dial that back now because as city laws have changed and we've decriminalized shoplifting and retail theft, we've also got some bad actors in our stores. And so you will see us shift more to assisted self-checkout, and we'll have an associate checking you out now.
Now, at the same time, some people might say, oh, that's going to be too expensive. But given the problem, the size of the problem, you can find good enough labor that can help and still please your customers, right?
Absolutely. I mean, when we put self-checkout in before, shrink always grew, you know, 20 to 30 basis points. Now we're seeing growth in our self-checkout well over 100 basis points. And so that is way too much. And we've got to bring that back and put some labor back in the store, which the customers will love, too. So there's a customer experience to this as well that we believe will be beneficial also.
I'm glad you said that. There was a terrific article in The Atlantic not that long ago which said, you know what, people really don't, they're not really as crazy about self-checkout as you think. I hadn't thought about what you said, though, which is it was sure good in COVID when you didn't want to speak, didn't want to talk to anyone. Now, let me ask you, do you feel confident that you should stick by your goal of 3,500 stores by 2030 if right now the growth may have been so fast that you didn't realize that you had this kind of theft problem as bad as it was?
Yeah, it's a fair challenge. The top line is not our problem right now, though, Jim. And in fact, you'd argue that if we get shrink back under control to pre-pandemic levels, you'll even see more growth on that. But we're really excited about the pipeline. We announced yesterday we're going to open between 225 and 235 stores this year. Our pipeline for next year is almost full as well. So there's a lot of demand for Five Below stores. Our customers love it when we enter the community. And I'm not concerned about the top line at all.
My friends who are in the real estate investment trust business say there are still some very high quality spots, but they also say that right now tenancy is very high. Are you able to find the right locations given the fact that we see 96, 97, 98% occupancy at some of these great real estate investment trust malls?
Yeah, it's that's clearly was the truth coming out of the pandemic. But unfortunately, last year we saw several bankruptcies. You know, last week, another chain announced closing 1,000 stores. Joann Fabrik announced Chapter 11 this week. So The shift is happening, and I think what the real estate developers really like about our store is that it's a differentiated concept. And so we bring a different customer, we bring a young customer, we bring families. So they're very excited to have a chance to get Five Below in their center.
All right, finally, let's go back to what matters. You had Hello Kitty, Disney, Harry Potter, you had hydration. You got anything cooking in 2024 that we should be focused on?
Well, none that I can tell you about. I can tell you right now it's all about Easter. Everything up here is Easter. Here's a fuzzy egg. You know, you open the egg and, you know, wouldn't you just love, Jim, a Skittles-scented body scrub?
Where else can you find
a Skittles-scented body scrub than Five Below? So that's the fun of our store. It's a treasure hunt. You always find something new in it. We'll take care of the bottom line. We're going to take care of this shrink problem. But in the meantime, it's still about product and merchandising and driving the business. And yes, we do have some fun things coming down the road.
I got to tell you, I've been waiting for the stock to come down. It never came down. Suddenly when it comes down, everybody's scared. I'm not. And I'm thankful for Joel Anderson, President and CEO of Five Below, coming on the show. Joel, see you in Philadelphia in a couple of weeks, I hope.
I'd love to see you out there, Jim. And appreciate having us on. And we're excited. And this is a great entry point for Five Below.
I agree with you. And Mad Money's back here for the break.
Coming up, a longtime Cramer favorite is playing defense. Is there a buying opportunity in Palo Alto Networks? Find out next.
What's happening with cybersecurity? About a month ago, Palo Alto Networks, long one of my favorites, saw its stock plunge 28% in a single session after the company gave conservative guidance and management made what sounded like discouraging comments on the conference call. CEO Nikesh Arora spoke about, and I quote, spending fatigue, although he later clarified that he wasn't talking about overall levels of demand. He meant his clients are sick of spending their money across many different cybersecurity vendors in order to get complete protection. Since then, Palo Alto has been trying to get Wall Street on board with their platformization strategy, where they try to get customers to adopt their own complete soup-to-nuts solutions rather than going with a la carte products. After initially rebounding after the quarter, though, the stock's been heavy this month. We're sticking with it for the Chapel Trust, as we've told the investing club. But do not take it from me. Earlier today, we got a chance to check in with Nikesh Arora, the chairman and CEO of Palo Alto Networks. Take a look. Nikesh, last time we spoke, we talked about the platformization, and I like to know, because your industry works pretty fast, what's the customer response?
You know, Jim, I know there was a lot of trepidation around platformization. It's fascinating. Everybody else seems to want to now talk about platforms, which is great. I've been very excited about the response I've gotten from our customers. For the first time, I have inbound calls from customers saying, how can I take a bunch of my legacy stuff and move faster towards this notion of platformization? And that, by the way, that's not just because of platformization. I think the hacking activity continues to increase every time you and I speak.
Well, that's kind of where I'm going, because I think the hacks are now beginning to affect mainstream America. I was part of an unfortunate hack involving healthcare system.
Yes.
Somehow they know my data. Someone knows my data. I'm being called several times a day about what happened with me. And what I'm saying is there's got to be millions of people being in my situation. What is going on? It's hitting home.
Well, Jim, you know, since you and I talked last time, there have been four major things that have happened in the hacking world. One, you know, CISA sent out an advisory that everybody has to get off legacy VPNs as quickly as they can. Literally, they told people every government department has to get off it. Of course, that means every enterprise, every company is looking at getting off that. So I've seen about 100 inbound calls from customers saying, how do we get off this as fast as we can? So we actually launched something.
And it's a system that you don't, that people are on, that the government says, we don't want you on, and they have to go to another system. And it could
so
be
they basically have to get off Ivanti, and they have to get onto a SASE platform, which is our SASE platform, which we've been deploying for the last many years. I've got 100 customers calling saying, how quickly can I get off this and get on your platform? We have free trials running for 90 days. We have hundreds of customers are calling us. So this is one thing that happened. The second thing that happened
is... It sounds like there's no more fatigue when it comes to people who are trying to figure out what to do.
Look, there's never been fatigue on getting their cybersecurity environment to a better place. There was a challenge about getting maximum value, and that's what we're addressing. So... notice I changed from fatigue to maximum value.
Yes, you did.
I think the better word.
Well, the reason I say this is because I think there's a crisis that we all didn't see coming.
Yeah.
And I think that the bad guys must have like gotten some sort of cartel and gotten information and split up this information, because all of us, I mean, anyone who has a spam call in the last 48 hours, it's from someone who knows your healthcare records.
Yeah, so look, the second, third, and fourth thing, the second, obviously, we all heard about the Change Healthcare hack, unfortunately. They've publicly stated that Palo Alto is working
United
with them.
United Health.
Well, Change Healthcare
right.
is a subsidiary of United Health,
right.
which is where this happened.
They brought you in.
They did, yes. It's us and Mandiant. We're working together. But what's different is, in the last 4 weeks, we have brought back their systems with their support. We have reconnected the pharmacies. The U.S. healthcare system is back on track. Now, what that is resulting in
It was down.
Yes, it was for a few days because we had to make sure we cleaned everything. We put it in the right place, make sure the data was up and running. All connections were secure. So we brought it back up and running. What is important is Change Healthcare is going to platformize Palo Alto end to end. Right? It feeds back.
So they went with you.
Platform.
Right.
We have things in place. We're working to. I want to make Change Healthcare look like the example of what great looks like, because we think we all deserve that, especially as it relates to our healthcare industry. There is no risk that can be taken in that regard. So I think the healthcare industry is on alert, making sure that everything gets up to snuff as quickly as possible.
And we spoke last. We were concerned that maybe there were trouble closing federal deals. Have the federal deals accelerated?
Well, the good news is, you know, as we said, we de-risked that out of our business forecast. So, yes, the federal deals are slowly moving in the right direction. A lot of the Avanti replacement impacted the federal departments, okay. So which they are coming back to saying how quickly you can get off that. So, look, business is exactly where it should be.
Right.
Platformization is beginning to take hold. Lots of customers are calling us. Hacks are continuing to rise, unfortunately, like you said. They're mainstream.
Right.
We're seeing a lot more nation-state activity on a constant basis. So, the environment is sort of where it was, and cybersecurity is going to be around for a very long time.
Okay, I think the market is big enough for everybody. I do know that a competitor, George Kurtz, whom we both know, does a very good job at CrowdStrike, did say that a global financial service giant replaced your company's Prisma Cloud product in a large seven-figure deal. That was on his conference call.
Should I remember what seven figures is. Oh, it's $1 million. Got it. Yes.
Okay, then he also mentioned that a major mobile computing company standardized on log scale next gen SCM away from you. What I'm just wondering is this. People switch companies,
yeah.
right? I am sure that there are people who were with CrowdStrike that switched yeah. with you, and you just don't talk about it with me.
Well, Jim, I'm going to take the higher ground. I think George runs a good company. CrowdStrike is a great product. I hope one day they become a platform. But for now, what we're seeing is cross-platform deals. I'm focusing on eight-figure and nine-figure deals because that's what's going to make Palo Alto Networks great and the largest cybersecurity company in the world. And I'm glad that he's getting some seven-figure deals and
I
more power
to
both of us.
I hope the sliding's over, frankly, because I think there's so much room in this. This is the fastest-growing space in the world. I do not want to hear that one is a loser and one is a winner when United Health has to call you for change because the hacks. I mean, this morning we did a piece about how the sewer and water companies have to be on
yes.
alert. Are you getting deals from that area?
Look, critical infrastructure has always been a weak spot because they have traditionally not have been able to invest as much in technology as they should have. And we're busy connecting all of those to the internet. So as you collect old legacy systems to the internet, you need to get cybersecurity up and to a state where those things cannot be interfered with. So I think we are going to see constant upgrades needed in the critical infrastructure, whether it's water, electricity. You know, soon there's a lot of discussion going to be with AI and power. Like, power systems are needed to fund all this wonderful AI data farms that we're going to have in the future.
Now, firewall business has been in decline. Now, it's a legacy business for you. Can this be given away as part of getting people into platformization, or does it not matter?
I think there is a fallacy out there that the firewalls are not going to be needed. It's kind of
right.
like when people said we won't need storage at one point in time and we won't need PCs. I think those businesses are just fine. Firewalls will have the same fate in the future. Last quarter, we were the only hardware firewall business that took share in the market and grew positively. So we continue to see low single-digit okay, growth in the hardware business.
That's different from what I understood. That is different.
Yeah. No. Look, firewalls are going to be needed. There is
okay.
more and more data flowing through the pipes. The more data flows, you need more data inspection. The cheapest form of data inspection is hardware. Many people are moving to the cloud. You need software firewalls. So you're seeing growth both in hardware, lower single-digit growth, and higher growth in software firewalls.
Excellent. Last question. We were obviously at NVIDIA's conference, a lot of Gen AI. We know that they announced a deal with CrowdStrike. I have to presume you work with NVIDIA, right? These are
yes.
And it's you're not putting out a press release saying you work with NVIDIA, but they obviously are partners when it comes to being partners. You need them.
Yeah, so Jim, AI is going to be transformative. I think you spent the whole week talking about AI. It's going to be big. I think NVIDIA is amazing at what they're doing. We're working with NVIDIA, with Google, with Claude, with OpenAI, because we have to do things. One, we have to protect our customers from anything that bad actors use these AI platforms for. And that's going to be a big deal. We're already beginning to see activity where bad actors are using AI to attack people faster. Secondly, we have to make sure we embed AI in our products. So we're working with everyone. We're really excited about it. You will hear a lot more from us.
Well, I hope to stay tuned, and I hope that we get to see all the stuff that you got planned for us.
I look forward to showing it to you, Jim.
Excellent. That's Sukesh Arora, Chairman and CEO, Palo Alto Networks, PANW, and a very large position for the Chapel Trust and Investment Club. Thank you.
Thank you.
When we return, master the markets one stock at a time. The lightning round is up next.
And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready? Scheme day. Time for the lightning round. Comes up my start with Linda in Florida. Linda.
Hi, IQ Jim. SMCI. Shall I buy now?
No. Look, I would rather buy NVIDIA 100 points higher than it is now than buy SMCI. That's how I feel about it. Let's go to Ann in Indiana. Ann.
Hey, Jim. Thanks for the annual meeting. I'm a club member. Really appreciate your effort.
Well, we got a big one. I think we're having a meeting next week again. They're working me to death here, but that's okay. I'm ready for it. What's happening?
Yes. Alibaba, buy more, sell.
Oh, it's so hard. If we trusted the Chinese to do the right accounting and do the right thing by people who are working really hard, then we would say buy it. But right now, they seem to be inclined to attack all the rich people, including the people who run that company. So we're going to have to hold off until it goes under 70. Let's go to Vinny in New Jersey. Vinny.
Booyah, Jim.
Booyah.
Thanks for taking my call. How do you feel about AMD over the next 12 months?
I like AMD here. I think AMD has been in the penalty box long enough, and I've got to tell you, I do live in NVIDIA land, but I have not lost sight of the fact that Lisa Su is one of the greatest managers of our time, and it is time right now for me to think, can I own both those for my Chapel Trust, NVIDIA and AMD, and I'm coming around and thinking I can. Let's go to Chuck in Arizona. Chuck.
Hey, Jim. It's Philadelphia's favorite son. How are you?
Oh, man, doing great. Thank you for asking. How about you?
All right. Yeah, I'm on the Jensen Huang AI craze, and I want to ask you if it's the right time to hit the buy button on Applied Materials.
Look, it's never been the wrong time in the last couple of years because Gary Dickerson's so great at what he does. Now it's up 5. It's at a high. I buy some and let it pull back. I would not buy all at once. Let's go to Mary in Idaho, please. Mary.
Hi, Jim. This is Mary in Idaho, and I'm a frequent caller and a member of the club.
Oh, thank you.
I want to thank you for all the guidance and direction and information you share with us individual investors to help us reach our financial goals.
That is our plan. Thank you.
You done good, kiddo.
Thank you.
The stock I'm calling about, I've held for quite a while, and I've noticed lately it's going backwards instead of forwards, although it is up today. And I know you prefer Home Depot, but what I've got is Lowe's. And I don't know if I should just hold on to it and see if it reverses and start.
No, Mary, you're going to hold. Lowe's is really good. And Marvin Ellis is a great CEO. And I've got to tell you, Lowe's almost had its all-time high. Home Depot, great, too. Both of those are good. Either one is right to buy right now. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the conclusion of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by Charles Schwab. Coming up, a chip off the old stock? Cramer examines the CHIPS Act next.
When you hear the U.S. government's writing a check to Intel for $8.5 billion and extending an $11 million loan on top of that to build out semiconductor plants here in America, you're probably thinking, boondoggle. To many, it seems like a foolish giveaway. Won't Intel build these plants anyway? They've already committed to a $100 billion investment plan in the United States. But I say that is actually all wrong. Intel's investing here precisely because of the CHIPS Act, a bill championed by Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo because she realized our country's way too dependent on foreign semiconductor manufacturing. Although we design tons of chips here, we tend to outsource the manufacturing to Taiwan or South Korea, Malaysia. The CHIPS Act, which I championed from the get-go, was a response to a real need. We don't manufacture high-performance chips here. We don't make many of the chips used by our own military. And as we found out during the pandemic, our overseas supply chain, forget about it. It's much more fragile than we thought when it comes to semiconductors. In fact, we have an unbelievable dependence on a single company, Taiwan Semiconductor, which is a serious problem because our number one geopolitical rival in the world, the People's Republic of China, wants to devour Taiwan. And the more our Commerce Department curtails the sales of our highest-end chips to China, including the ones NVIDIA rolled out at GTC earlier this week, the more incentive China has to do something crazy to get its hands on those high-performance Taiwanese-made chips. Of course, the critics love to say that the government's clueless when it comes to picking winners. They argue the Commerce Department doesn't know what it's doing when it throws billions of dollars at Intel to fund these new facilities. After all, while Intel used to be the leader in cutting-edge semiconductors, that ended ages ago with the ascendance of Jensen Huang's NVIDIA and Lisa Su's AMD. So why the heck would they pick an Intel? Look, I get it. It's a good question. But you got to keep in mind something. You got to keep in mind that most semiconductor companies don't actually want to be in the business of manufacturing chips. The margins are much lower than simply designing the chips, and having Taiwan semi-physically make them is what a deal. And that's doubly true if you're doing the manufacturing here in America. It's just way too expensive. No way Intel would be building new foundries in this country without government subsidies. They could make chips in Taiwan at a fraction of the cost, boost their earnings per share. How did it get to the point where we manufacture zero accelerated high performance chips here? How'd that happen? Frankly, we just don't know how to do it because we don't train enough engineers and our workforce has minimal experience in building these complex foundries. It can take up to 4 or 5 years to get these plants ready to produce the best chips, and almost no company can afford to make that kind of investment unless they can guarantee a good rate of return on Wall Street. And the only way to do that in America is with government incentives. Finally, it drives me nuts to hear people saying that the government's picking winners is a guaranteed disaster because the government doesn't know what it's doing. That's the rap. I've heard it many times. Now, look, sometimes that's true, but it depends on the people. I know Intel can get the job done. Seems to be a fine choice to me, even as I don't like the stock. Secretary Raimondo is pretty much the only person in the Biden administration that knows the ins and outs of business. Before she got into politics, she was a venture capitalist, for heaven's sake. Her team is unbelievably rigorous. They speak constantly to all the major hyperscalers, companies like Microsoft, Amazon, Alphabet, and, of course, NVIDIA. The effort includes Brad Koenig, the former head of Goldman Sachs Investment Banking Group. Goldman Sachs' tech group. I mean, I know Koenig. I helped recruit him to Goldman back in the day. He's exactly the kind of guy you want for this job. I mean, I can't believe he's willing to take it. So think of it like this. We need to build these chips in America, but we have no hope of making that happen without these subsidies. And let's remember that many other countries subsidize chip making far more heavily than we do, especially China. Plus, we have the best possible team to pick the so-called winners. The Intel subsidy will bring back business that would most likely have gone to Taiwan. Not that there's anything wrong with Taiwan, great ally. But sadly, it's the country most vulnerable to Chinese aggression. If we want to protect our strategically essential supply chains, we need to be able to build these chips here. And that's exactly why our government needs to spend this money. Oh, it's no boondoggle, people. It's something like, let's call it, an economic necessity. I like to say there's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise you I'll find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you tomorrow. Last call starts now.
All opinions expressed by Jim Cramer on this podcast are solely Cramer's opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, or their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by Cramer on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Jim Cramer as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his opinion. Cramer's opinions are based upon information he considers reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Mad Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Mad Money disclaimer.